This is Ryan Fitzpatrick, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
Happy New Year, everyone, and welcome back to the Neil Reynolds Podcast. Now, after taking a bye week so we could overindulge during the festive period, we return feeling a little more plump and wholesome, but with more NFL life stories for 2022. Remember, you can watch this episode and all of season two right now on NFL Game Pass. If you head over to nflgamepass.com, you can sign up to get all sorts of NFL content ahead of the upcoming playoffs. But if you're remaining here, you'll be able to listen to episode 23 of the Neil Reynolds Podcast as we kick off 2022 with Kevin Booth, the former offensive lineman with the Raiders and the New York Giants. Kevin is a two-time Super Bowl winner, forming part of those famous Giants teams that defeated Tom Brady's New England Patriots. And since retiring, he's moved upstairs at the NFL to work as Director of Football Development. We'll hear more on that later in the episode. But as normal, I started this chat by asking Kevin how he first got into football.
I was always an NFL fan, always a football fan. I have one older brother. He's 10 years older than me. And, you know, to take it a step back, I actually grew up in South Florida, which is known for its football prowess. So football is always around me. And my brother, he played high school football and also played college football at East Carolina University. So my formative years were spent watching him play football and also just being an overall fan of the game in general.
Were you always an offensive lineman?
Unfortunately, yes. unfortunately, because I quickly realized that, you know, as much as I like throwing the ball and catching the ball, my favorite player of all time is actually Jerry Rice. So I used to grow up, loved watching the 49ers and used to go outside and run slants and outs and try to perfect my footwork. And then I quickly realized no matter how good I can catch the ball or how well I can throw the ball, my home is going to be on the line.
So as you went through, I assume playing high school and then you start looking at college, what took you to the Ivy League and Cornell? How much interest was there around you coming out of high school?
I wasn't heavily recruited. I went to a small private high school in Fort Lauderdale. And even though we played against a lot of talented players, I just wasn't heavily recruited. It wasn't like I turned down, you know, Alabama or USC to go to Cornell. So the one thing that my school is known for was sending people to the Ivy League, not necessarily for sports. So, I was fortunate enough to have the opportunity to go to an Ivy League school. I could have walked on at a couple of other schools and played football, but I realized, you know, why not try to get the best of both worlds? Why not get a good education and then have the opportunity to play football? And, you know, the beautiful thing about the NFL and its robust scouting is that if you're good enough, they're going to find you anywhere. It doesn't matter where, as you can see from our international player pathway program, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to get onto that in a little while because it's certainly interesting. And kids who are in college as well now, as you know, is a subject close to my heart. So we will get onto all of that. So what was it like balancing life as a student athlete? You know, I'm sort of seeing that now with George, with my son, kind of what he goes through. And yeah, you know, I guess all student athletes have to be prepared for that. It's good to have a former player like yourself be able to deliver that message, you know, to youngsters that are going to go and have to do that.
Yeah, I think honestly, being a student athlete, it teaches you structure. You get accustomed to a schedule, you realize that you have to make the most of your time because everything, you have a lot to accomplish, right? You have your school obligations, you have your team obligations, and then obviously you have your life as a teenager or a young adult. So for me personally, I thought it was great to have that structure in my life and have it instilled at such an early age. And honestly, when I got to college, I thought it was easier when I was in season than in the off season, because everything was so regimented in season. You know, you knew you had to wake up, you had to work out, you had to go to school, you had meetings, but then also you had to get that group project done. So whereas in the off season, you kind of had a little bit more wiggle room, and then procrastination starts to take place. So, you know, honestly, I think those skills that you strengthen as a student athlete are tremendously beneficial to adulthood and when you get into the quote unquote real world.
And I guess when you went to an Ivy League school, you go there for the football, but you were probably already thinking 20 years down the line in your life, right? Is that what, was that one of the reasons you went there?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I was a major, my major was the hotel administration school at Cornell, and it's pretty famous, world renowned major. And that was exactly it. You know, I figured, why not set myself up? Yeah, I think one of the taglines is the 40-year degree, right? That once you graduate from one of these schools or something along those lines, that you set yourself up for the next 40 years, regardless of your academic or your athletic next step. So that was my thought, is that I can do both right now.
Any good traditions in the Ivy League? So many college football, you know, there's so many things in college football that maybe we don't always pay attention to from afar. And that's one of the beauties of college football, isn't it? I just wondered if there was anything like that in the Ivy League.
You know, one of the cool things about the Ivy League is just the overall history. Yeah. You start to walk some of the halls, whether it's at Cornell and we're seeing these old national championship trophies and, you know, records against the big powerhouses. Because what a lot of people don't realize is basically pre-World War II, the Ivy Leagues were basically what the SEC is now. You know, like we were the Alabamas, the LSUs, basically, and us along with the military institutions. So to see some of those historical images and footages, and I tell you what's one of the cool things is the stadiums, how old some of the stadiums are. For example, Schocal Field, where Cornell is, I think it's one of the top five or six oldest current stadiums. And then you go into Harvard Stadium and Franklin Field for the University of Pennsylvania, where, you know, they still hold the Penn Relays every year. So you get to see these historical stadiums and these all-time greats that have played in these places, and to be able to play in those venues, it was tremendous, and try to add to the lore of you know, college football.
Fantastic. Tell me about the transition then into the NFL. Sixth round draft pick with the Oakland Raiders, 2006, pick number 176. Were you happy to hear your name called, or was it a frustrating wait for 175 other names to go first?
You know, it was definitely the latter. It was more relief once, right, I was picked. You know, going through that process, I started to get some publicity, and, you know, it's only natural, I think, to start to read a little bit of your press clippings, right? And, you know, so all the draft pundits are saying that I'm going in the third round, the second round, who knows? So I guess I had higher expectations for draft day. And, you know, I think for the draft, for most, it's a great experience, but for some, it can be a little difficult. And I told myself I wouldn't watch a lot of the draft picks, but literally I watched every pick, like you said, the 175.
Oh, no.
So by the time I was drafted, I think I was laying in my room, you know, basically by myself, isolated from my family, when the phone finally rang. And it was more of an exhale. And then it was excitement after that, because it's a childhood dream that was fulfilled. And I was excited to go to Oakland. It's a place that, you know, has tremendous history, has the coolest uniforms in all sports. So I was excited about that.
Yeah, I wonder, because it's behind you. It's taking center stage. You got the Giants ones, which I assume are from Super Bowls, but the Raiders silver and black is center stage.
Exactly. What was pretty cool about my career was I played 9 seasons, and my first year was with Oakland, and that's my rookie year jersey. And nice. Then I played 7 years with the Giants, and in my last year, actually, I went back to Oakland. So that's actually my last jersey that I ever wore. So pretty cool to kind of have that bookended, and then also with the 2 Super Bowls. So it's pretty symmetrical, I think, in terms of the way my career went.
I can see on behind you, and obviously if you're listening to this podcast, I apologize, but this is a program on Game Pass, so if you're watching, you can see it. You've got gloves there attached to the uniform. Were you much of a collector of memorabilia so that you could do what you've done there behind you?
You know, it was probably those 2 Super Bowls after the game, you know, that state of almost shock the fact that we'd won the Super Bowl. And I determined at that point, I'm not letting go of anything that I have here. If I could have left the stadium in my uniform, I would have. So I kept everything from both of those games. I have the shoes and the helmets over there also. So one of the cool moments, actually, if you look at the top there, that's Super Bowl 46. That's actually the confetti from
do you know what?
Up in the top corner.
Kevin, I asked so many. It was in your helmet.
It was in my helmet.
So you didn't collect it deliberately, because I asked so many players that. Do you ever think to collect the confetti? And they say, oh, I wish I had. And they don't think about it in the moment. So that was lucky it landed in your helmet.
Lucky. It was one of those things where the next morning I saw that I had some. So I made sure to secure it at that point.
We'll be back with more from Kevin Booth after this short break on the Neil Reynolds podcast.
This is Jack Crawford, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds podcast.
Hello, Neil. Happy New Year. Welcome back.
Happy New Year, Gary. Hope you're well.
Well, I know you've had COVID, which we'll talk about later on in the program with the mailbag. But as we talk about NFL Game Pass and our ongoing partnership with them, I just wanted to talk a little bit more in a somber tone, I guess, because over the Christmas period, there was the passing of John Madden. And on Game Pass, I've been able to learn more about a guy who, to me, I thought was just a computer game title, but someone who's had a massive, massive impact on the NFL and the NFL in the UK.
Yeah, the All Madden documentary is on NFL Game Pass if anyone wants to check it out. And his football life is on there as well. An incredible, incredible legacy he left behind. A Hall of Fame coach, 103 wins in 10 seasons with the Raiders. Never had a losing season, won a Super Bowl with them. Went on to be commentator at the top of his game for close to 30 years, worked for all four major networks in the US. Gary, when he was at the height of his commentary powers, John Madden was paid more than any NFL player. Can you believe that? The highest paid person in the sport was a commentator, John Madden. And as you mentioned, he spawned a whole new generation of fans with his computer game series. So yeah, his life is worth several documentaries. So I would recommend everyone to check it out. Because everyone's been touched by John Madden in some way, either as a coach, as a commentator, or with the computer games. So he was a fascinating character. He will be missed.
Yeah, when you see the documentary, that you really get an idea of the cultural depth of Madden as well, in terms of, like you say, he wasn't just a coach, he wasn't just a media personality, he was sort of all of the NFL in a weird way.
And right at the very end of his life, he was very big on player safety. He was a sounding board and a confidant to Commissioner Roger Goodell, and worked on a lot of player safety issues even late in his life. So, just one of many kind of original programs that are on NFL Game Pass. It's not just where you can go and watch games. You get a lot of great content, a lot of great documentaries, NFL Network programming. Yeah, so please check that one out.
So we will talk about the playoffs next week and how people can watch them on Game Pass, but we just wanted to say that little note about Madden. So on that, Neil, I'll let you get back to Kevin.
Hi, I'm Bruce Arians, and you're listening to the Neil Reynolds Podcast.
We're going to get into some of your career then in the NFL, because I think, again, it's a fascinating story, and you've been through so many different things. So before we get to the Super Bowls, you experienced getting cut, right? Which is something that a lot of players go through. And I guess now, you know, you're able to tell players, you know, that experience. What was it like for you?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, because honestly, at that point, it's the first time basically you're told that you're not good enough to play football. You know, basically up until that point, you've been one of the best or the best player on your team your entire football career. So even that year, even that rookie season in Oakland, I was a sixth round pick, started basically 14 games that year. I came in halftime of week two, played the rest of the season, played pretty well on a not so good team. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm one of the few bright spots here, and I'm going to be around here for a while. And we had a coaching change and new philosophy, and, you know, come cut down day, I'm released. So it was definitely a shock. And that's one of the things that you quickly realize about the NFL, is that things can change quickly, and that, there are definitely peaks and valleys. So fortunately for me, the waiver wire system allowed me to get claimed the next day. And there's some uncertainty there too, because if you get picked up, you don't know where you're going. So it's basically, you know, it starts with the team with the worst record all the way up to the team with the best record in terms of water. And, you know, for 24 hours, you have no idea or control. So I'll never forget that call that I got the next day from my agent telling me, hey, you got to get on a plane to Newark, New Jersey. You're now a member of the New York Football Giants, and being excited, but then also nervous. Mm.
A couple of things I want to pick out of that 2007 season. Your thoughts on a rainy night in London? Start of something historic?
You know, what I remember about that, honestly, I didn't play at all. I think I was inactive that game, but being able to go over there, and I'll never forget our center, Sean O'Hara, basically telling us, the offensive line, saying, hey, I've never played in a Super Bowl, but I'm imagining that this is similar to what a Super Bowl environment is like. And I thought that that trip actually brought us closer together as a team and helped kind of get that run started for us, because I think that time spent together in a new country and a new experience, it really tightened that group up for sure.
And then Sean O'Hara and all of you did get to play in the Super Bowl because of that season. You go on a run after the London games. I want to talk about the NFC Championship game first. So you joined me for one show on Sky Sports. I don't know if you're just dipping your toe in the TV world, see what you think, but it was great to have you in the studio.
It was a blast.
And I remember you telling me about that game in Green Bay, which was the third coldest game in NFL history. So we work on Celsius over here in the UK. So it was minus 18 degrees Celsius, which was, I think, minus one Fahrenheit or something like that. But with a wind chill, it was minus 30 degrees Celsius. How painful was that? I mean, you won the game in overtime. You're going to the Super Bowl, so it's probably all right. But
right. It was one of those things where I felt cold for about 4 days after it. It was so cold that it took your breath away. You walked outside and it's like your lungs would contract out there. And then to put it in perspective, we not only had Gatorade on the sidelines, but we also had chicken broth, you know, because it was warm. It had salts in there to help replenish your whatever you would sweat out, or at least attempt to sweat out. So just a surreal moment being there. And as a fan of football, you're thinking, man, does it get any better than this? It is freezing NFC Championship game in Lambeau Field. Brett Favre's on the other sideline, and to be able to come out and win that game. And I was actually on the field for that field goal to send us there. And, you know, it was just one of those moments I'll never forget.
Did you have crusty bread rolls with the chicken broth? Probably not. I'm thinking of something completely different.
Unfortunately, no. But it would have been great after, though, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah. Warm you up a bit. What was your viewpoint of, again, these little snippets of NFL history you've been a part of? Super Bowl 42, in come the undefeated New England Patriots, looking for only the second perfect season in NFL history. And then we get the David Tyree helmet catch. Please tell me your memories of what still must be one of the most iconic plays in NFL history, let alone Super Bowl history.
Yeah, I was on the sideline, and, you know, going back to that Week 17 game where we played them, I think we quickly realized that if this is the best team ever, well, then we must be one of them too, because we felt as though we matched up very well with them after we played him. But the Tyree catch, I'll never forget. I was on the sideline, it's third down and five, and I saw, because I'm an offensive lineman, I'm watching our offensive line, you know, and I would help out with things that I see, or, and then also just being prepared because you're a play away from going in. And I'll never forget seeing how quick they penetrated on defensive line and seeing them grab Eli and thinking, wow, that we played so well up until that point, and now it's going to be fourth and 16. Like, the game's over. And then I see Eli escape. And then when he threw it, then I'm thinking, oh, well, now we definitely lost, because he just threw it to the middle of the field, which is awful. and then once I saw David Tyree catch the ball, it was just like we were all in shock. We couldn't believe it. And then one of the things that people don't realize is that immediately after that, we had another third down. We had third down and 11. And Eli threw a short pass to Steve Smith, and Steve Smith got the first down. And I think right when he got that first down, that's when I realized, it's like, we're going to score a touchdown. Notice I didn't say win. I said, we're going to score a touchdown, because I knew who was on the other side. Right.
Exactly. You never say never with Tom Brady.
Exactly.
Obviously, any Super Bowl ring for any person is going to be special. Was 2011 season, you beat the Patriots again in the Super Bowl in Indianapolis. does it mean more to you because you were kind of the regular starter then on the offensive line, or are they both kind of equally valuable to you?
It's funny because if you ask probably the group of us that were fortunate enough to be on both teams, all of them would say the 18-0 first Super Bowl is probably their favorite one. But to your point, you're correct. I think for me personally, selfishly, the second one means a little bit more just because of the way that season went in terms of my contribution. I started that season as kind of the sixth man, that swing person inside. And due to injuries, I started at games at three different positions that year, and basically became the full-time left guard around Thanksgiving time. And then we went on that run, and being a part of that team and the resiliency that we showed, that one to me means more personally. Now, granted, they're both terrific and outstanding, but for me personally, yeah, Super Bowl 46.
I was working for Sky Sports TV, of course, that game. We're in the end zone. Our studio is right in the end zone where you're coming towards us for the game-winning touchdown. People often ask me, what's the greatest throw I've ever seen? Eli to Mario Manningham down the sidelines. He must have had 3 inches where he could drop that football in. You're probably not seeing much of that one because you're blocking for Eli, but what a sensational play.
Yeah, I remember I'm trying to block Vince Wilfork on that play. Wow. And if you watch the replay, Vince is about this close. I'm hanging on for dear life right in front of Eli when he throws the ball. If Eli has to hitch one more time, he's probably bouncing into us. But then when he threw it, we always had a code word to kind of hurry up and run a play before they can review it. And I'll never forget Eli basically saying, hey, we got to get up there and snap the ball. This is that code word. So we all run up there. And then obviously the Patriots challenge the play, and coming into the huddle, Mario saying, I caught the ball. And we're, every receiver says they caught the ball whenever it's a challenge, right? So we're like, okay, all right. But then looking up on the screen and seeing it and being like, oh my gosh, he really did catch it. And you could almost see the Patriots almost deflate a little bit on defense. So that's when we knew once again that we had the game where we wanted it, and how could we run out the clock and win the game? And, it set up that memorable Bradshaw touchdown, which obviously left a lot of time there for Tom Brady to then get another shot at it again, which made us nervous once again.
Yeah, and he throws the Hail Mary to Gronk, who's playing with one arm. That was where I was going next. I was going to ask you that because I'm pretty sure, I don't know, what stays in the huddle? What goes on in the huddle stays in the huddle. I don't know if you can tell me. Was he definitely told not to score? Because he ends up slamming the brakes on and almost reversing into the end zone. Because, of course, if he takes a knee, you can run out the clock, kick the field goal. There's no chance of a Tom Brady comeback. What happened in the huddle, if you can tell me?
Yeah, it was one of those things that the one awesome thing about Coach Coughlin is we go through all of these scenarios in practice, and it becomes so monotonous and boring because we go through all these, whether it's we're backed up and it's fourth down, 2 seconds left, we're going to go for it and run out the clock where Eli's going to throw the ball out of bounds, high out of bounds. So the clock runs out. We have an intentional safety that we're going to take. We practice all of these crazy scenarios, and we've practiced the kneel down and kick the field goal. But I think it's one of those things that we all got caught up in the moment that we didn't necessarily discuss it immediately before that play. We talked that it could happen, but that play, and it's funny, if you watch the America's game with Eli about that Super Bowl, if you watch the replay, Eli breaks the huddle and it dawns on him that they're going to let us score, and he turns to tell Ahmad, and then he turns back and he describes that he didn't want to mess him up or
too late, something. Yeah.
And then there's miscommunication, and then there's a fumbled handoff or anything like that. So he kind of turns and stops, and then he runs the play. And it was one of those things where as soon as we come off on the offensive line, we realize what's happening. And if you watch the replay, you'll see none of our offensive line, we don't celebrate. Ahmad scores and we all kind of stand there because we're like, oh no, we know what just happened, one of those funny moments though.
So you can't even say
after.
Yeah, you can't even say I threw the block that led to a game-winning touchdown in the Super Bowl because no one blocked.
No one blocked anybody. And, they were trying to push Ahmad in. I think even if he didn't fall in, I think it was either Spikes or Mayo, which they were about to push him in. So
they were going to take him in. He couldn't stay out. Tell me about transitioning into the league office then, Director of Football Development at NFL, how you've enjoyed that process and how valuable you think it is for the league to have former players like yourself in those buildings.
You know, it was something that, you know, I look at as the next step in life. I looked at it, the way I approached it was no different than going from high school football to college football to the NFL. I knew the NFL wouldn't last forever. So what's that next step? And I quickly realized that I wanted to stay involved with the game, specifically the NFL. And I was fortunate enough to have this program through our league office called the Legends Development Program, where basically it was an opportunity to have an internship in a department in the league and see how I liked it. You know, is this something that I wanted to pursue? And I actually started my career at the league office in sponsorship and learned a tremendous amount through that department. And our EVP, Renee Anderson, who's one of the rock stars of the NFL, really took me under her wing and the rest of that department. And I learned a tremendous deal. And I was able to transition over into football operations under Troy Vincent, who's a former player as well. And it's something that I think we provide tremendous value because we have that unique perspective. And we're able to assist other departments as well. So not only are we working on things in football operations, but our marketing department or our social responsibility, our communications, whoever it is, having that player perspective, being able to have those relationships around the league, whether it's with coaches who either coached us or played with us now. Unfortunately, I'm starting to see these head coaches who I've played with. You know, it definitely provides value in the league office.
So what are the kind of key areas you like to, you know, that get you kind of excited? Maybe it's domestically or internationally. You mentioned the international players and looking at that. What kind of things do you fall across your desk that you kind of really make your, you know, that energy in the morning?
Yeah. So the big thing I'd say domestically here is the combine. So obviously we've looked at how we can modernize the combine that's in Indianapolis and how we can continue to grow that. But then also we have, we're about to launch an HBCU combine for the historically black colleges and universities. We're going to have an event in partnership with the Senior Bowl this upcoming January. And we think that this is the start of something great. Some of the league partners are already very engaged. Both Microsoft and Gatorade plan to be big presences at those events. And we think that this is the start of something terrific in that space. But then also, you mentioned it earlier, international, being able to support our international department, both with our international combines that we're doing, but then also supporting them with their UK initiatives and the academy specifically. So it's an exciting time. And I think when you talk about football growth in terms of from a football perspective, the game itself, not necessarily from a marketing standpoint, I think there's a tremendous opportunity internationally.
What advice would you give to an NFL Academy student or one of those kids that's now in college in North America? I'm just going to record this and pass it along. So, but what would it be? Because you've been through all of it, all of your journey you talked about. You've had the ups, the downs, and then transitioning out the other side of it. What advice would you give?
To appreciate where you are currently, realizing that everybody can't even make it that far. You know, you're already special at that point. So don't get caught up in looking at what could be 5-10 years down the road. It's how do you take advantage and appreciate where you are now. And that's something that I did growing up and going through my journey, but I don't think I necessarily truly appreciated it and really took advantage of those moments. You know, I think that that's something that we all should do, whether it's at that teenage age or even now, me, you know, 7-8 years out from playing, is to appreciate where we are and what we've accomplished to get to this point. So if you're an academy student right now, there aren't many of you. There are a lot of people that wanted to be in that position. You know, if you're playing college football, that's already a tremendous amount of success. So appreciate that journey and let the chips fall where they may and pursue your passion. You know, if you don't end up making it to the NFL, but you love the NFL, try to find something that you can do to keep you involved with the game. There are tons of opportunities in sports and specifically in the NFL to continue that journey as well.
How impressed have you been with the NFL's international growth? When you look at, you're part of that first game, you're there at Wembley Stadium on that rainy night in 2007. We're recording this on the Monday after week 15, full disclosure. F.A. Abada's just recorded two sacks for the Buffalo Bills last night. And you've got these six teams that are going to market themselves in the UK going forward. You've got 18 teams that are going to do it around the world in eight different countries and markets. It's remarkable, isn't it?
It is. It's outstanding. And you just think about how much the game has grown in those 14 and a half years or so since that first game in Wembley that you referenced. It's amazing. I think just the overall, craving or thirst for the NFL product, where games are being aired in the middle of the night. And I could see it on Twitter, where fans are watching the games, they're engaged. They're asking questions, they're posting highlights of their favorite teams. And, but even I would say a handful of years ago, I would never imagine that we'd be in this position so fast that, we have to make league-wide decisions with international football in mind, top of mind,
Where it's part of the conversation now, isn't it?
Right, all the time. Right. Where are the next games? How can we get more games internationally? That's exciting.
Last tour back to your playing days. The toughest player you ever had to block.
Wow. Toughest player I ever had to block. I'll answer this in a couple of ways. First, I guess I'm fortunate, and I say that kind of rolling my eyes because of the relationships over there, to have played with a lot of great players on my own team. So every day in practice, I have to deal with, the Justin Tucks, the JPPs at the time, OCU Minora, Matthias Kiwanuka. These are guys that are at the top of their profession, and I have to deal with them every day in practice. So I think it's one of those things that they helped us so much with our preparation, that going into the games, we were confident that we could perform at a high level because of what we had to deal with every day in practice.
So let me ask a quick follow-up on that. So OC's a great talker, of course. He's been a pundit of the year over here with the BBC a number of times. Was he talker on the field?
Yes.
Yeah.
No, well, you know what it was? The thing that would drive you crazy about OC is he would beat you on a pass rush and he would laugh. And to a professional and to somebody with pride, that was one of the worst things you could do. You could talk trash, do everything you want, but when he had that little laugh as he went by, and there's nothing you can do about it, right? You come out the next play and he could do it again. So, we used to have a lot of fun with OC in practice. And, it was one of those things where he created such a tremendous competitive atmosphere that it helped us in those 2-minute drills, where at the end of games, we expected to score. And it was more of a shock if we didn't score in those 2-minute situations, whether it was at the end of the half or at the end of a game. And I grudgingly give a lot of that credit to OC.
Grudgingly.
Yeah.
Do you miss playing, or has it been easier because you're still around the game? Has that been easy to deal with?
It's definitely made it easier. But there are certain things that you'll always miss. You'll always miss Sundays.
Sundays tough. Yeah.
Right. Not necessarily tough, but you still kind of get those butterflies. If I go to a game or if I'm at the Super Bowl, I know what that's like. I get that nervous energy, and, it's still as though I'm preparing to play. And then the other thing that you miss and you can't necessarily replicate is the amount of time that you spend with your teammates, that locker room time. When you think about it, when you're in season, you're spending more time with your team than you are with your own family. So you become very close, and those are the moments that you miss, not necessarily the practices, training camps, or the film sessions after rough games, but definitely the games themselves, preferably when you're winning, and the time in the locker room, for sure.
This is definitely the last one. So you were one and done on Sky Sports. So my last question is, what did I do wrong?
You did nothing wrong. I had a blast there. I would love to do it over and over again. It was basically, this opportunity to join the league office, I thought was a tremendous opportunity at the time. But I always tell everybody that it was such a great experience. And for those players that have the opportunity, I've recommended that they take advantage of it, because it gives you reps, it gives you exposure to the game over there, and they get to realize that there are a tremendous amount of fans over there in the UK that are very passionate about the NFL and very knowledgeable about the NFL. And it's good to engage with you all over there for sure.
So there you are. Hope you enjoyed my conversation with Kevin Booth. Quite the career he's had and still enjoying in the NFL offices now. Let's bring back in producer Gary Hayes, whose most important role on this recording has been to show me where the cough button is while I'm talking. That's very useful, Gary, given my effects still lingering after COVID over Christmas.
So how are you feeling?
I'm all right. I'm just, I cough a lot and I get breathless a lot. It's been a couple of weeks now. So I managed to get through the Sky show on the Sunday in week 17, 7.5 hours. I did the Boxing Day Sky show for 7.5 hours from my kitchen. But it's kind of, it's still lingering around, but yeah, I'm all right. Thank you.
So that kitchen, anyone watching on Game Pass would have seen you in the kitchen recently as well. So it's a famous kitchen. Maybe we should have a sponsorship deal with B&Q or Magnet or some other known brand.
I think that's where we're going. I think it's the future. It's the future. Get myself a newer kitchen. Yeah. So, what we got in the mailbag?
Yeah, so we've got two questions, which I feel bad for because I know you're struggling, so maybe I should answer them. Not really. Just to get off with, really, starting with Chris Payne, our first question of 2022 says, Neil, what is the franchise that's been the biggest disappointment?
I'd have to say the Cleveland Browns. Yeah, they fell out of the playoff race, officially knocked out in week 17 when the Chargers beat the Denver Broncos. Then they lost to the Steelers. This was a team that was supposed to have a Super Bowl quality roster. This was supposed to be the complete team. You know, they had an improved defense. They already had the strongest offensive line in the NFL, one of the best running back duos in Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. Our friend Dearness Johnson added to the mix as well. But the question was, what was going to be coming out of Baker Mayfield's arm? The truth is a mixed bag. You know, it's a lot of mistakes. He's very banged up. He's been he's battled with wide receiver Odell Beckham before Beckham left. He's battled with the fans. He's been booed by the fans. He's received death threats. I mean, the whole thing's been ridiculously bad, and it's not all his fault. But to find himself on the end of such silly threats from fans is ridiculous. But it's a sign of how bad things have been in Cleveland. And I remember watching them in week one, and they had such a good feel-good story last year. They won their first playoff game in 26 years. They went to Kansas City in week one, and they almost beat the Chiefs. And I remember Patrick Mahomes hugging Baker Mayfield at midfield after that game, and they were both mic'd up. And Mahomes said, "We'll see you in the playoffs." And it's just not panned out. So the Browns are a massive disappointment.
You said about Mayfield being banged up. Talking of banged up, the Jags got banged up against the Patriots 50-10 at the weekend. And I'm assuming that's where Lucas's question comes from, because he says, Neil, what's next for the Jaguars? Can they get out of this mess next year?
What's next for the Jags is they have to, the next hire as the head coach has to be got right. You know, Urban Meyer didn't pan out. It was a terrible, terrible mistake that. It was just awful. It's dropped the Jags to even greater depths, not heights. And, you know, if you think about this year, there was a period where everyone was like, oh, the Houston Texans won't win a game going into the season. Houston are basically giving up on the year. There was a period where the Detroit Lions looked like they might not win a game all season long. The Jets were terrible. And yet, for the second season in a row, as we record this with one game to play, the Jags are going to have the first pick in the draft again. The Jags will find a way to have been the worst team in football again. Now, there are bright spots. You know, they need to get a little bit luckier on injuries. You know, James Robinson is one of the few bright spots on offense. He tears his Achilles last weekend. So, you know, he's out. But I like Marvin Jones at receiver. I still like DJ Chark at receiver. And I still believe in Trevor Lawrence. I still believe they have a franchise quarterback. So now they need a good offensive-minded coach who can fix the culture as well. So fix the culture, create opportunities for Trevor Lawrence, and actually the turnaround could be quite quick. But they're as low can be right now.
Yeah, it's not looking good, is it? Just like your voice. I don't want to put more pressure on you, Neil.
No, that's that.
Asking you to speak more. Yeah, so let's end this episode. But before we do, who have we got next week, if you can speak?
So we've got a couple of options. We're sort of chasing down and have an opportunity soon, I think, with an NFL owner, which is something we've never had on the podcast, and another former player who's moved into TV. So I'm still working on those. So again, the mystery tour continues, but we'll be back next week with another good life story, which is what this is all about. Yeah, so thanks for joining us. Happy New Year again to everyone. Hope your team is in the playoffs or has a chance to creep into the playoffs. My thanks to Gary, and we'll see you next time. Bye for now. To the Neil Reynolds podcast. This episode was hosted by myself, Neil Reynolds, while Gary Hayes is our producer. Gary and I have also written this series together. Our consultant producers are Kerry Levy, Nick Lapworth, and Neil Pacchietto. Matt Alabaster is responsible for all of our artwork, including the graphics and videos across our social media channels. Taylor Hayes mixed this episode and also composed our theme music. If you'd like to keep up to date with everything we're doing throughout the season, then please follow us on Twitter and Instagram at the NR Podcast. My personal account is also at Neil Reynolds NFL. If you've enjoyed this podcast and would like to hear more like it, then visit highway61.media. That's HWY61.media. Please tell your friends about the podcast, help spread the word. Better still, leave us a rating and a review wherever you're listening. This has been another Highway 61 production for the Reynolds Podcast Network.